I'm walking through Podil, a neighborhood in Kyiv of cobbled alleys, brightly painted buildings, enormous shade trees, and why should Ukraine be different? Hipster coffee houses. I'm looking for a building where one of our stories is set. Here it is. It's a synagogue. It's a quiet morning now, and in wartime Kyiv, even quieter than usual. Here's what 79-year-old Peter Rabstevich told Bronia Borodinskaya in 2002 about what life was like in the post-war Soviet Union and in Kyiv. His story is read for us by Henry Goodman in London.
From 1944, there was only one synagogue operating in Kyiv, the one in Podol. A huge number of Jews came to pray there on the High Holy Days. They crowded the entire street at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. A radio was installed in the synagogue with speakers outside, so people could hear the singing and praying. It may not have been following the religious rules to use electricity on the High Holy Days, but there was no other way. In 1946, the authorities shut down the radio, but people still crowded the street. A great many Jews didn't have prayer books, and I'm sure a lot of them couldn't follow the prayer service anyway. But they wanted to pay tribute to the past, to their murdered families, and to remember that they were Jews. I was one of them, although I did know how to pray. There were no Jewish schools in Kyiv after the war. Oddly enough, the only place where Hebrew was taught was in the Christian Theological School in St. Andrew's Church. And the only magazine published in Yiddish was about Birobidzhan, which described the happy life of the Jews in that godforsaken, miserable enclave thousands of kilometers away in Siberia. But I read every issue, just to keep up my Yiddish. In 1948, the struggle against cosmopolitans began. Just another word for Jews, of course. Jews were fired, Jewish theaters were closed, and there were popular Jewish singers whose music suddenly vanished. In 1950, I went to the concert of Aleksandrovich, a Lithuanian Jew who sang Hebrew and Yiddish songs. The media called him a cantor and a propagandist of Zionism. And Jewish writers and artists took pseudonyms. But newspapers loved printing their real names and claiming that they were doing great harm to the Soviet state. And then the doctor's plot began at the end of 1952. Jewish murderers in white coats, they called them. Children of our friends and acquaintances who had studied so hard in school were not being admitted to university. In March 1953, Stalin died, and people were crying at home, in school, on the streets, all because their father, as they called him, had passed away. They were feeling confused and afraid of a future without him. But after Stalin's death, the doctors were rehabilitated, although a few of them had died in prison camps. And then the rehabilitation of political prisoners began. Khrushchev denounced the cult of Stalin at the 20th Party Congress in 1956, and that is when many people started to wake up to Stalin's crimes. But getting into good universities for Jews? That remained a terrible problem for us. As for me, I always treasured my past. And I was fortunate to meet Evgenia Siderman at work. She and I married in 1949, and we had two wonderful children and six grandchildren. Even during the hardest times, I have never turned my back on my religion and always celebrated Jewish holidays, although because of work, I would usually attend synagogue in the evening, except once each year, the anniversary, when most of my family was murdered. For decades, I would go to synagogue quite early, well, before work, and in fact, before the synagogue even opened. I would just stand there, bring a prayer book, and pray. I did this every year for the past 59 years. And that is why I still come to the synagogue in Podol. But after 1991, I no longer have to stand outside. And I am no longer alone.